Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. All the interviews in this series can be found at strugglingteens.com, along with 26 years of essays, visit reports, and press releases relating to the network of private parent choice residential schools and programs working with teens and young people making poor decisions. Now, today is August 25th, and we're going to talk about learning, particularly how boys with autism learn. My guest is Linda Tapasaw. Good morning. At least it's still morning here. Good to have you here, Linda. And thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay, now Linda has a master's degree in child and youth care administration, a bachelor of arts in religion, and she has worked in therapeutic programs since 1991 in a variety of roles. I must have met you shortly after you got started.
That's right. That's right, not very long after.
Since 2001, she has led or co-led Talismans programs, which provides camp and school programs for young people with neurodevelopmental disorders such as autism and ADHD, and hopefully Linda will have a chance to tell us a little bit about that. Well, the topic is how boys with autism learn, so could you start on that? How is it they are different than what's called neurotypical, which is the rest of us?
Yeah, a lot of times kids with autism are not, they're high-functioning in other ways, are not even diagnosed until they reach beyond fourth and fifth grade, when learning becomes more abstract and less concrete. Because one of the differences is that our boys with autism, and girls as well, are behind in developing that ability to think abstractly. So there's more need to be concrete or help them with that progression. Mm-hmm. Also, we find often, not every child with autism, but many of them have a slower processing speed than their peers, so they may have a perfectly good intellect but need more time to process the information and to come out with a response. So that's another difference, and that not needing more time to process lead to them needing more time to comprehend information, which can lead to them being anxious or frustrated because they aren't keeping up with their peers.
You know,
so
and
that's another piece.
Yeah, and that's another piece of it, as you say. And what one observation I have here is so far as they come across to the other kids and other people, like slow is a term for low intelligence, and that's not the case at all with somebody with low processing speed you're talking about. And some of the other things might cause frictions and problems, and that would be their frustration part of it.
That's true. They often are put into classes that are not as challenging academically for them because that slower processing speed gets them labeled as not able to manage that more information. So that's frustrating as well. A couple of other things I'll throw out is that with their concreteness, they are also typically more black and white thinkers, have a harder time accessing gray areas of information, and that is again, a piece that shows up more once you're getting in the middle of high school, and their sensory overload for some of them, not for every child with autism, but for some of them, can get in the way of being able to learn. So an awareness of what's in the environment can help you make them more able to access information like everybody else.
So somebody has to have a knowledge of it, like the bad old days. Okay, they're going to resource room for the retards. I think happened all too many of them. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. They're just a lot of kids with a lot of different needs to be grouped together, and these guys who could have much information, and you know, sometimes our guys are called little professors because they have so much information on certain topics, would be completely demoralized and bored because they're with the groups that were getting a different kind of needs than they had met.
And it'd also be a little bit in the social thing, because I've met a few of those, and you can't shut them up if they get going on a topic.
It's true, and that can also get in the way of their learning.
Yeah, that can too. Okay, so we've got a rough picture of some of the problems we're dealing with. How can they be helped? What can a parent do, or what do teachers do that parents might be able to pick up and do to help their children?
Yeah, there are a number of things, many of which can be done in a typical classroom, and for others may need to be considered to make some more extreme accommodations, but one is they need the time to process. And this is a huge thing that many of our parents, coming into our parent seminar in which we talk about processing speed, have one of those light bulb moments. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm talking over my child. I think they're not listening. I don't give them time to take what I'm saying to them, process it, and get an answer back to me. So parents and teachers, if they recognize that processing speed is an issue and give that child more time, can often get more of the answers out of them and less frustration.
What does it look like? What does low processing speed look like? You know, if the average person comes up to it and low processing speed, you've talked about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Is it just where you say something and they don't respond immediately, so you think maybe they haven't heard or they don't understand? Or
right. You may see a lack of facial expression, because another piece with autism is often that they're not good with the nonverbal cues, with their own facial expressions or body expressions. So you may see something blank in their face that looks like they are not comprehending at all, or they're not engaging with you at all, but they may be thinking as hard as they can about what you say. An easy way to check that out, we'll sometimes do at our camp, and really it's, you know, research, but it doesn't feel like it, is tell a simple joke or ask a simple riddle and just wait and see how long it takes for them to respond and either laugh or tell you that was stupid or give you an answer. And you'd be surprised that some, it may be they actually come back to you a day later.
A day later.
Yeah. But I would say, number one, parents, ask an easy question and wait and see how long it takes for your child to respond to start to get a sense of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would give you an idea of where they're at. And so then the solution is just to be aware of that and adjust to it. Don't expect rapid-fire answers.
Right. You won't get them. Going along with that, you can ask as a teacher or a parent fewer questions, or give them written or another way in which they have time to process. And this is where you also get those untimed tests. As an accommodation, so they have time to get that information out. A couple of other things related to that is giving the information in smaller chunks. Our guys are often have difficulty with multitasking or taking information in a lot of chunks. It's part of, they have an executive functioning difficulty, the same as kids with other issues such as ADHD, and may need instructions written, or they may need to be just given one instruction at a time. So being aware of that can help them also process one thing at a time rather than being overloaded with too much information.
Okay, well, one of the things in the low processing speed I'd heard is that a child with a low processing speed is tough working with pencil and paper, and so using a computer in classes is almost a must. Does that apply here?
I will tell you that I'm of the old school. That research is now coming back out to say that people learn things better if they actually write. Now, at the same time, there is a lot of difficulty for some of our kids taking information either that's spoken to them or that's written on a board and getting it on a paper. So there can be a benefit when all you're trying to get is information down, notes down, to either using a computer or someone else to take notes for you. But I believe that there should be at least some amount of writing, because it interacts with the brain. Honestly,
yeah.
The new research is showing you that. So we need a combination.
Yeah, all training, brain training, handwriting is good at brain training because it's using all the different aspects of the brain. And that's part of the problems. If one part is weak, then they might have trouble doing it. That just probably means that they need to practice it more.
Yeah, and again, we don't need to be overloading them with tons of work or homework or numbers of problems, but they need time to grasp and work with and do some writing on a small amount at a time.
All right. Well, we have about finished up our time, but you're the director of the Talisman programs there in North Carolina, and could you take about half a minute or a minute and explain what it is and what you do? Could you work with these kind of kids we've been talking about, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Talisman programs has run for 35 years, a summer camp for kids that have neurodevelopmental disorders, including ADHD and autism and Asperger's, and now is reopening our semester program, which is a boarding school version of what we do. And in short, The pieces that we are working on with the kids is developing their social communication skills, helping them with reading social cues and responding well, managing this frustration that can come from whether it's lower processing speed or difficulty staying focused. So helping them develop that social piece as well as good decision making and the pieces that go with executive functioning issues. And we do this all in an outdoor type of environment that's very engaging for the kids.
So it's basically a summer camp with these special perspectives, so the kid's going to get a lot of outdoor activities?
Yes, and I will say one thing. Parents often ask, why would I put my child with a whole bunch of other kids with the same needs? What are they going to learn? And I will tell you, one of the best things about the camp and the school is kids will say, I found a place where I fit in, and I'm just like other kids. And that's extremely relieving for them and really opens our ability to work with them.
Now, is this the first year you're doing at a boarding school, you know, going year-round?
We ran a semester program from 2007 to 2010, which became a school. That school doesn't exist anymore, but we reopened the semesters this year. So it is kind of our second round doing that.
Well, second time generally better because you learned a lot of lessons from the first one, I'm sure.
We are calling it Semesters 2.0, and we hope it's even better than the last time.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, if somebody wanted to talk to you or find out more information about Talisman or about this topic, the How Boys with Autism Learn, how would they get a hold of you?
They can go on our website to talismanprograms.com. We're also under Talisman Camps. Or they could call us at 855-588-8254 or contact us at info@talismancamp.com.
Okay, well, thank you very much. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. Been talking to Linda Tapaspa, the head of the Talisman programs in North Carolina, and we've been talking about how boys with autism learn. Thank you very much. Good to talk to you, Linda.
Thank you.